Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I think once I had Maureen's story pinned down, the ambition for me then was to apply for funding to make the documentary that I really wanted to make. So, because I felt I had Maureen's story, that was a way to show people, I suppose, what was possible with what I was doing and the women that I was meeting. So I applied to the Arts Council for funding to make obviously a documentary, and then I put up an advert on the Irish Television Network website, and essentially what I did was I asked for volunteers to come on board that had experience and an interest in filmmaking. And then maybe 2 weeks before I started getting CVs from the Irish Television Network website, I actually received the news that I didn't get the funding from the Arts Council. So I was kind of disappointed with that then, because I just felt, well, if they're not interested in my story that I'm trying to tell for these women who have such an important story to tell, like, what's the point? I have no money. Like, how am I going to make this? And then just over the next kind of 2 or 3 weeks, it was kind of November 2006, I'll always remember it, and just this binging of CVs coming in one after the other. And about 40 people like applied or expressed interest in working on this story. And I think that really propelled me forward to kind of say that there's kind of good in the world, that people wanted to assist in a way that maybe they didn't think about the story, but that they saw the merit in the story. And out of that, then I would have worked then with a guy called Seamus Hegarty and Gerard Boland. So there were two cameramen that came on board to work with me. Now, as part of that, the only survivor I had was Maureen. So I remember I went back again and I looked at some of the documentaries and some of the interviews that were done over the years about women that spoke out about being in the Magdalen laundries. And I just came across the Richard and Judy television interview that was done with a survivor by the name of Mary Norris. And I was just completely blown away by her story, her ability to articulate, recall, and I suppose recount the experience of the abuse that she suffered. I went online and I found an article that was written by Lynn Kelleher, a journalist, I think, in Cork at the time. And I got in contact with Lynn then and I said, look, would you put me in contact with Mary Norris? So she actually passed on my details to Mary Norris. And then one night I got a phone call from this woman and she just began to tell me her story. And I said, oh, hold it there. I would like to come down and interview you properly, meet with you, and get a real sense of who you are as a person. And rather than doing this over the phone, maybe, you know, meeting in person will allow us to explore your story in a better way. So about 3 weeks later, I then reached out to Jura and Seamus to see if they were free. And this was our first time, I suppose, with our production crew heading down to Tralee Hotel and filming our first survivor.
I've lost 2 years of my life from 1950 to 52. I don't know what happened in Ireland. I don't know what happened in the world. They're lost. I might as well have been dead. And of course I was dead because I was no longer Mary Cronin. I was Myra the Penitent, the Magdalene and the sheep, the lost sheep. We were called sheep. There's a new sheep arrived.
And how did you end up in the Magdalen laundry?
I went to the movies without permission when I was working with you in the town of Tralee. That's all I did.
So you were put into the laundry?
Yes.
Because you went to see a movie?
Yeah.
That was the only reason?
That was the only reason. And I was when I was taken back to Killarney, I got to go back a bit now. The next day I was taken down to a doctor in Killarney who's still alive. And I won't call it an examination because it was a violation. And he examined me to ascertain whether I was still a virgin or not, which I was. And I was up in Cork, the second day up in Cork, no, the third day, which was a Friday, I went up on Saturday, and the Monday, I was called on by the good shepherd sister. And another doctor examined me because I hadn't been ministrating at all. I didn't ministrate until I was about 17 and a half.
Bring us to when you're inside the laundry, the first day you arrived. And from there, when you got out, what was it like?
Up at 6 o'clock, the rosary, while you were getting dressed and cleaning the dormitory. Down to mass, of course. Then into a bit of breakfast. Straight into the laundry. I was in the washhouse. They would have done linen tablecloths, hand-embroidered linen for Harrods in London. They would have done First Holy Communion dresses. They would have done wedding dresses. They would have done all scaffolders, if you know what a scaffolder is. All that kind of work.
And how much did the women get paid then to do that?
Get paid. What you got was for each, you got what they called marks, from 1 to 100, a mark. And at Christmas then, you would go into the laundry room to the when the laundry came in, and there'd be toothpaste and soap, and then 2 marks for this and 2 marks for that. I never had the full 100 marks because they were taking off me for things that I'd done or what I said or whatever. They fed you, that was about all.
And what was the food?
Food was atrocious.
Like, did you have, we'll say, bacon and cabbage for dinner?
No. You had, it was all done in a big, all steamed food. It was all steamed food. It was the same every day. It never varied. Ever varied. At Christmas, I remember, you got rabbit. Not turkey, rabbit. Baked rabbit. The food was atrocious. And every Friday morning, after your breakfast, you had to line up. And there was this older Magdalene, and she'd give you a big mug of Epsom salts. Because the food was so stodgy that they'd give you a good clear out once a week. When I say it was atrocious, it doesn't matter what way I say it. I know it was. The people out there know it was. They know it was. The people of Cork supported them. They supported that regime by sitting in their laundry, by taking their communion dresses, by taking their wedding dresses. They supported them. So they don't want to believe. They know it went on. They know. They're lying if they said they didn't. They know. They knew what those places were. Don't tell me that the people on St. Deswell didn't know what that place was. Of course they did. Of course they did. They just don't want to know. They're ashamed of that part of history. And the way I look at it is, if we don't come to terms with our past, how can we go on? There was no human feeling. Nothing. You did not feel like a human being at all. You didn't. From the way you were dressed to the way you were treated.
What was the atmosphere like in a laundry?
There was no atmosphere. There wasn't. There was no laughter. There was no jokes. There was no companionship. There was no friendship. Nothing. Nothing at all. I was there when one old lady died. She was brought up by the laundrymen. She was in a coffin now. Some people say there were buried with sheets and that this woman was in a coffin. She was brought up. All the women stood around, a few of the nuns. There was a priest. And I looked at her. There's nobody crying. I thought they're probably wishing they were going in there. It's very hard for people to understand what it was like. I don't think they will ever understand, but they know what happened. And that's the part that hurts. They know. And the nuns know. And not one nun came out and said, yes, it did go on. When I was taken in there, why didn't the good shepherd Nun that took me in that day say, we don't want this young girl, she's done, why is she here, we don't want her? Of course they did, they had a job waiting for me in one of the washing machines. I saw an old lady there going out to the dentist. I think it was called the North Infirmary at the time. I thought, I'll fake toothache. And I went 2 days without food and crying with this toothache. I thought, no. They'd have to put, I can't go out in these clothes, so they're giving my own clothes to go to the dentist with two of the trustees. They took me up to dress me to go to the dentist. The clothes must have been somebody who was there in the 1800s. But when I saw myself, I thought, well, I've no chance of running away like this. Because I would have run away. I really would. We got to the North Infirmary. The dentist went into the dentist. Asked me to pint where the tooth was, and I pinted. He took it out and he said, there's nothing wrong with this tooth. That's desperation. Irish people have an awful habit of pushing things under the carpet. Don't talk about it and it'll go away. Don't talk about it. I think when people like me came back and England gave us our dignity and our bit of courage, they never thought that we'd come back and open this can of worms. They never thought it. And they thought that nobody would believe us. And if they kept denying it, nobody would believe us. But I'm afraid that an awful lot of people believe us more than they believe the nuns. And they know that. They know that.
Many of the nuns alive today would say that it was different times, different circumstances, and it wasn't as bad as the women are saying.
Excuse my language, that's a load of bullshit. I know I'm telling the truth. I feel sorry for them that they can't believe it. They believe it all right. They know it happened. They know it happened. That's for sure.
From being inside the laundry, what support mechanisms did the nuns or did the congregation put in place for you when you left the laundry? So the laundries were seen as a place of, I suppose, reforming and penitence for your sins. What did the nuns do to help you when you got out of the laundry and put you with Zayden back into society?
They did nothing. They didn't even shake hands to me. They didn't even say thank you. They didn't even say, come back, we'll help you. Nothing. Nothing whatsoever. Nothing at all.
When you went to England, and obviously you were getting your life back in order, what kind of, we'll say, I suppose, psychological effects did having being in the laundry have on your life after you got out of the laundry?
When I went to England first, I was, what age had I been? I'd been 19, I'd been about 21, or going to 22 maybe. I think I was busy enjoying myself for those first couple of years. And to be quite honest, if I am being honest and I've always told the truth, I would say that I was locked away because they thought I was going out with men, which I wasn't. I was a virgin when I went in there. When I got to London, I must honestly say that I might have been a bit promiscuous. I was looking for love, and I couldn't distinguish between love and sex. That's if you love somebody, you had to give them sex. I would go to the dances. I loved dancing. If chap took me home, if he didn't want to sleep with me, I thought there was something wrong with me.
What place do you hold the church for yourself now? Where do you hold the church, as in for your own being now, that looking back on it?
I am not a practicing Catholic, and I never will be. Ever. I don't need to talk to a bishop or a pope or a cardinal or a priest. I talk direct to my God. And he's the God of love, and he cares for me. And he's my best friend.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.